Good morning. My name is Leslie, and I will be your conference operator for today. Participation in this conference call is strictly limited to invited participants. This call is exclusively for financial analysts and investors. If you are not an invited guest, please disconnect at this time. I would like to welcome you to the conference call on the report on economic activity, public finances, and public debt as of the third quarter of 2022. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a questions and answer session. If you would like to make a question during this time, please press star eight on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, please press star eight again. I will now introduce you to the speakers. Rodrigo Mariscal Paredes, Deputy Under Secretary for Economic Planning at the Ministry of Finance, and María del Carmen Bonilla, Deputy Under Secretary for Public Credit at the Ministry of Finance and Public Credit, to proceed with their remarks. Please go ahead.
Hello. Good morning to everyone. I'm Rodrigo Mariscal, Under Secretary of Economic Planning for the Ministry of Finance. Joining with me is María Carmen Bonilla. We will be making some remarks on the results of the third quarter, results for the public finances. Before that, and passing the microphone to María Carmen, I will make some remarks regarding to the global economic outlook, our view for the Mexican economy, and then I will make some brief comments about the public finances. Let me start with the global outcome. First, what we are seeing is less inflationary pressures that are being easing for the third quarter of 2022. Basically, this is explained by lower agricultural prices, metals, and energy, although some of these have not recovered the levels pre-conflict. They have been pressuring the overall CPI, especially for Mexico, which is a very large economy and open to the exterior. Also, we have been seeing some supply chain disruptions that are also easing, especially, just to give you some numbers, the Fed Global Supply Pressure Index has decreased by 55% from June to September, and it's 4.5% below the pre-pandemic levels. Again, this is still high relative to what we've seen before, but at least we are seeing some easing on that part. We also have seen some easing in the cost of shipments across the globe, especially from China to U.S., and we think that this is going to be also positive for the inflation outlook in Mexico and this year and next year. Finally, there are some particular commodities that are still high, and we think that this is kind of a risk for the Mexican economy and overall of the world. In particular, we think that the natural gas, what we have seen in Europe and it's still a problem. We saw that the prices have been coming down. However, we don't see a way to store that kind of commodity and some less pressures from that market. Also, the diesel component from the gasoline prices has been decoupling from the gasoline. This is something that we need to be taking a close look into this because this is somehow a pressure for the public finances, gasoline subsidy and overall the economy, inflation. For the inflation and the outcome of the monetary policy, we think that it's gonna be tight. We still see that the U.S. Federal Reserve is gonna keep tightening. There's still uncertainty about the terminal rate, although we have seen that at least with the numbers that we have seen for the U.S. economy, there are some positives that we might not be facing a hard landing, but this is something that we still, there's a lot of uncertainty on the outcome, and we'll be keeping a close look into this. Now, let me just give you some reference that we think that is gonna be supporting Mexico's growth for this year and next year. Most of these things that I'm gonna be referring to, it's variables or key elements that we have seen since the start of the year. Probably we are going to be seeing. We have seen all this year, and probably going to be pushing growth for Mexico. I know that the overall look or the outcome for the U.S. and the industrial production has been revising downwards, not so much as the industrial production. However, we think that if you see at the components and in the details, there are elements that we think that this is going to be supporting for the Mexican growth. So just give you some examples. The industrial production so far has been increasing. The projections have been revised up and down, but still for this year are at 4.1%. Here is going to be 0.1% according to some estimates. However, we think that there are at least two things that are not providing enough detail for the Mexican economy and would be supporting the growth. The first one has to be the replenishing of inventories, especially for two sectors that are very important for the Mexican economy. The first sector is all the car inventories, which are 77% below the pre-pandemic levels, and also the industrial production for the oil part. So we think that these two pieces of information would be supporting Mexico's growth for this year and probably next year. But again, it's something that we have to be closely looking into this. Now, the employment part of the U.S., we also have seen very positive numbers, especially in terms of the level. The employment of Mexican-born in the U.S. in September reached 7.3 million. And this number is above about 400,000 jobs from pre-pandemic levels. So I think that even if we see a very hard landing or some shock to the employment or to the labor market in the U.S., we think that we have covered, or at least we have reached some level that even hard landing would not be significantly impacted the level of employment, and thus it's not going to be affecting so much the remittances. So, although we think that this is going, it is a risk, but we think at least it's somehow or in some sort of way not so, would be not so severe, even in a very pessimistic scenario. Now, for sure, we think that Europe and China are going to be facing more trouble than the U.S. I think that they are an important economy, but in terms of the Mexican exports, the exports to Europe are about 4.6% of the total exports, and combined with the U.S., although they have a higher share, we think that most of the trade that is going to be lost from Europe and China could be at least or somehow at some point covered by the North American agreement. We think that the exports from the North America region are going to be fine, although they might face some challenges facing the European and the China export shock that we are going to be seeing in the global economy. One thing that we need to take a look and be very cautious about is the foreign direct investment, which basically has a higher share for the European part than the trade. Currently, we have almost one third of the FDI that is coming to Mexico is coming from Europe, and about 13% of that the FDI is from Spain. So it's an important part that or a channel of transmission that we need to be taking care of or taking a very close look. Now let me go and talk a bit of the Mexican economic outlook, what we have seen so far and what we think it's going to be supporting, at least the internal part of growth. So today we saw the numbers from the third quarter GDP. Basically, it was a good reading, although some of the outcome that we have seen, basically we have estimated since March, at least in the middle range of our forecast. Practically, we are kind of in line with a growth of 2.4% this year. However, if you see the carryover that we have seen so far, it's about 3%. So we think that it might be some loss for the fourth quarter regarding the quarter-on-quarter growth rate to go to 2.5, 2.6%. So we decided not to update the numbers. We think this is a cautious approach, but this is going to be a positive number for the economy as a whole. some things that we still think that this is going to be supporting this year and next year growth for Mexico. Basically, all those sectors that have suffered so much from the pandemic, they were lagging behind this year. And since early on the year, we were seeing that those sectors were growing with a higher pace and a higher rate than the rest of the economy. So most likely, those sectors will keep catching up with the economy and supporting the growth rate for the year and next year. Probably accommodation, service, and leisure have been lagging behind and support growth here. We have seen the recovery on the tourism and especially the income from foreigners and all the occupancy of the hotels. So this is going to be an important part for the growth this year and next year. As well, we saw from the very beginning of the year that the labor markets were doing very, very good, both in terms of the labor supply that have been practically close the gap from the pre-pandemic levels, but also in terms of the formal employment. So the formal employment has been performing very well, and we have seen this in terms of the number of jobs that have been created, especially in the formal sector, but also in the tax revenues that we collect from the personal income tax. On the production part, the manufacturing, practically all the supply constraints that we saw last year that peaked about in October and in August, they have been consistently decreasing. They are like in a downward trending path. So we think that this is going to be supporting, and we have seen very good figures in terms of the exports from the auto and also the production in Mexico. Of course, the auto sector is not the only one that is going to be benefiting. Also, the computer equipment and all the electronics that we have been exporting and producing here in Mexico have been doing very good. Now, in terms of the domestic demand, private consumption has been giving us very positive results. Practically, we have three consecutive quarters of growth. And we have estimated a carryover of about 6.3% for this year. We think that it's going to be supported, again, for the labor market part, the overall revenues of the labor sector, but also so the remittances and other results from the economy that is going to be supporting the consumption. Now, for the private investment, so basically we see two parts of that, that it's a two-speed, let's say, recovery or growth from that coming from the private investment. Overall, machinery and, let's say, non-residential construction has been performing relatively well. For the private investment as a whole, we have eight consecutive quarters of growth. This have not seen since 2012. And again, we have a carryover of more than 6%. So we think that the private investment is going to be performing relatively good. However, the part of the construction has not been so dynamic, and this has to do, at least we think that it's partly because of the prices of construction material that have been passed into the consumers or the demand, and also the part of the credit constraints that have been tightening, and it's kind of non-supportive for the sales of new apartments and projects. Now, let me just go very quickly from the FDI and what we have seen so far for the reshoring. So far, we have seen positive numbers for the FDI. Accumulated in this year, we have an inflow of $27 billion. Dollars. That's a growth of about 49%. So it's quite high. Even excluding the acquisition from Univision and Aeromexico, we have an estimate of growth rate for the second quarter of 12% year on year. And the most striking part is the components. Basically, the components are that are driving the results are new investments. The share of those new investments represent about 43%. Of course, you have a part of this reinvestment in parent company's account, but the bulk of the dynamics, we would say it's basically new investment. Now, in terms of the nearshoring, basically we have seen that this is something that is happening, although there is not much information about it. There are some key elements that are supporting or at least are pointing that this is happening already. For example, manufacturing imports in electronics in Mexico are 30% above pre-pandemic levels. The FDI in the northern states have accumulated 7.2 billion in the year. And investment in manufacturing states especially has accumulated 6.4 billion. Now, let me go and briefly talk a bit of the inflation prospect and what we have been doing so far to tame the inflation outlooks and to support more the economy. You probably know we have the excise tax on gasoline subsidy that has been revised recently and it's going to be keep supporting the prices of the pump for this year and next year. But we have also tried to put some other measures basically to address some supply effects that we have seen in the economy. And just let me give you some brief description on those. So in terms of the PASIC results of the basket of the 24 items, in the third week of October, relative to the first week of May when we started the agreement, we have seen that the basket of the alternative projects, products that are not subject to the agreement, have increased at 8.5% points cumulative, but the basic basket has only increased by 3.5%. So we estimate that this is about 150 pesos of a cheaper basket for the week. So this is somehow supporting the consumption, especially for the lower income families, and we think that although not all of these items are computed or taken into account into the CPI, these have been supporting, let's say, a less pressure from the wage part and the income part, and we think that this is going to somehow support or help to tame a little bit the inflation pressure that we have seen. We also have been discussing with some companies, around 15 companies, to try to take out the red tape measures that they have in order to have a much easier way to import products. We are in talk currently to decrease also the tariffs of some products that that we have in Mexico that we think is going to be support, especially the consumption of, again, the basic basket. And we are thinking about restricting some exports, basically to help again to ease the pressure on the prices in the local market. In terms of the fuel stimulus, again, we think that the latest estimate that we have seen in the third quarter, the subsidy amounts of 350 billion pesos. This is very in line with what we think it's going to be, the annual estimate of 395 billion pesos. I know that they were at the beginning of the year many speculations about how much the cost was going to be. Some people had like a 500 billion pesos, which those was very much a very high bill. But we keep thinking that this is going to be close to 400 billion pesos. With the new measures, we have some estimates about how much it could cost with different outcomes, and we can discuss it later. But anyway, that's how we think that this is going to be the cost, at least for the gasoline subsidy. So one thing that we need to highlight is that the stimulus package or the stimulus for the gasoline prices are going to be more concentrated in diesel than the regular gasoline. This is basically what we have already, I have already mentioned on the the global environment and what has happened to the diesel prices. And now let me go very quickly on the public finances, and then I will pass the microphone to Mari Carmen. And basically what I would say is that the public revenues and expenditures and the results from the fiscal targets for the third quarter are broadly in line with what we think is going to be the closing for the year. We still have positive numbers regarding the tax revenues, both in terms of the personal income tax and the VAT. All revenues, again, are most in line with what we think is going to be the closing of the year. On the expenditure program, we are a little bit above the program, but basically this has to do more with capital expenditure more than the current expenditure. The current expenditure, we are slightly below the program, although I would have to remark that although we are a little bit below the program with those regard to the current expenditure and the capital expenditure, those numbers are growing in real terms of about 1.7% in real terms. So it's still growing positive for this year. We think it's going to be supporting the growth for this year, and especially next year, that we will kind of have a deficit financed by infrastructure projects of about 3.6%. This is going to have a positive effect, we think, in the overall economy, and especially in those states that are in the southern part of Mexico. In terms of the public debt, and perhaps this is a good way to finalize my intervention, we estimate that the current numbers that we have seen are closely in line with what we think is going to be the closing for the year. Currently, the debt stands at 46.5% of GDP, and we think we're going to be very in line with what we think it's going to be the closing of the year. So let me stop right here and then pass the microphone to Mari Carmen, because she's going to be doing something. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rodrigo. Good morning, everyone, and thank you all for the opportunity to share the main results of debt management during the third quarter of 2022. First, I would like to reaffirm that the main objective of the federal government is to maintain the public debt in a sustainable downward path as percentage of GDP. And to accomplish it, we are continuously engaging in strategies to improve our maturity profile, reduce the refinancing risk, and seek cost-efficient transactions. In this regard, I will now summarize the main actions contained in the report. Regarding the local debt, in the third quarter, the federal government continued with an intensive refinancing effort, concluding the following operations. On July 20, Minister of Finance issued for the second time in the local market an SDG bond, which complies with environmental, social, and governance criteria, denominated Bondes G. This instrument is denominated in pesos, and is tied to a floating reference, TIIE Fondeo. Bondes G were issued at tenors of 3 and 6 years, and this will help to mobilize some resources also from the commercial banks going forward. Most for a liability management transaction was carried out to purchase of 4.4 billion pesos in M bonos maturing from 2038 and 2042, and the subsequent issuances of M bonos maturing between 2047 and 2053 for the same amount. Then on August 18, an exchange of Bondes D for Bondes F was done between with tenors between 2022 and 2025, allowing investors to update their reference to the TIIE Fondeo. As you know, this is a big effort since the central bank has put the mandatory change by January 2024. This operation began with the purchase of 157.4 billion pesos of Bondes D maturing in 2022. Between 2022 and 2025, and subsequently Bondes F maturing between 2023 and 2026 were issued for an amount of 158.1 billion pesos. Finally, on October 7, Minister of Finance made a simultaneous repurchase and sale of debt. The purpose of this operation was to cancel debt maturing in 2023, 2024, and 2025, and also provide liquidity to the markets because of volatility and stress on the spread against the treasuries. The transaction consisted of a repurchase of auction of 68 billion pesos of debt, and subsequently an additional debt sale took place that helped the portfolio to increase the average maturity of 6 years to 11 years. These refinancing operations were complete without incurring in additional debt and in compliance with the ceilings approved by the Mexican Congress for fiscal year 2022. Now, regarding the foreign debt, on August 8, Mexico tapped the USD market in an effort to build its third SDG yield curve. This operation consisted on the issuance of an 11-year reference with a total amount of $2.2 billion. This was the first time that the proceeds of an SDG bond were used for refinancing purposes specifically, and the early redemption of the U.S. dollar-denominated bonds that originally matured was January 2025. This is also in line with the mandate from the President to reduce or smoothen the path into the next administration of debt maturity profile. On August 26, we introduced as well the inaugural issuance of yen-denominated SDG bonds. This was the first issuance on Mexico through this feature. We issued five new references in terms of 3, 5, 10, 15, and 20 years. And with this operation, Mexico became the first country in Latin America to place sustainable bonds in Japanese markets. This placement of sustainable debt becomes also the largest ever made by any country in the Japanese debt market. Mexico reaffirms its commitment to implement cutting-edge strategies to reduce social and economic gaps while promoting sustainable growth. Finally, the federal government will continue working to strengthen governance mechanisms and guarantee transparency in its actions in order to mobilize capital towards the SDG of the 2030 agenda. Now, I will mention some debt levels at percentage of GDP, some metrics. In the third quarter, the PSVRs stood at 46.5 of GDP. The domestic debt stood out for 31.8% of GDP and external debt for 14.7% of GDP. With respect to the public sector's net debt, that includes the net debt of the federal government, state-owned companies, and development banks, this figure was 46.5% of GDP, as Rodrigo mentioned before. The domestic debt represented 31.6% of GDP and external debt 14.9% of GDP. Lastly, the federal government net debt stood at 37.6% of GDP at the end of this quarter. The domestic component in this net debt stood for 29.8% of GDP and the external component of 7.8% of GDP. I would like finally to highlight some of the risk metrics that we have been following now for some quarters. Federal government debt portfolio preserves healthy risk indicators. Currency risks remain low, with 79.4% of the federal government's net debt being denominated in domestic currency and 20.6% denominated in foreign currency. Additionally, refinancing risk has been maintained at a low level, since the average maturity of foreign market debt is 20.9 years and the average maturity of domestic market debt is 7.7 years. Along with some stabilization in the treasury cash flows with this big effort on the refinancing side. Interest rate risk is also limited, given that 75% of domestic market debt is long-term and fixed nominal and real rates, while 100% of the external market debt is at fixed rates. In terms of financial cost of the public sector, we are around 12 billion pesos below the budget. This trajectory for year-end will depend on the monetary stance from the central bank, as well as the asset performance and hedging strategies from the state-owned enterprises. Thank you very much, and I will pass the floor for some questions.
Participation in this conference call is strictly limited to invited participants. This call is exclusively for financial analysts and investors. If you are not an invited guest, please disconnect at this time. We will now proceed with the questions and answers session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 8 on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, please press star 8 again. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 8 on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, please press star 8 again. As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 8 on your telephone keypad. As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 8 on your telephone keypad. As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 8 on your telephone keypad.
So it's the first time that we don't have any questions from the public. So let me just give you some remarks on the how things are doing with the legislative process that we started to replenish the stabilization fund. Basically, what we have for the package of this year, we went trying to pass two amendments to the budget law that we're trying to help us to replenish more faster the faith. So basically, the two amendments have been doing relatively well. So they have been already discussing in the budget commission of the lower chamber. They have been approved and passed. So we expect that during the next months, this is going to be discussed in the floor in the lower chamber and it's going to be voted. We have positive expectation that this is going to be passed, but it's something that we have to be taking a little bit closer on it. Now, let me just give you some estimates of about how much we could get into the phase for the rest of this year, for this year in particular. So currently we have an amount of 26 billion pesos in the FAPE. But so far, if everything goes according to the plan, we will be able to put at least 40 billion in terms of the extra revenue that we're going to be collecting, both in terms of the tax and the oil revenues that we are seeing for the current year. That will give us at least 40 billion. But on the top of that, if the laws and amendments are approved, we will be able to at least put 20 billion of extra cash into the FAPE. So that will give us a cushion of about 80 billion for the next year. Basically, our strategy for the closing of the administration is to have the faith as, replenished as much as we can. In some estimates that we have done for how much money do we need to have it into the FAPE, it's something of about 150 billion pesos. Of course, we are a little bit short of that number, but we think that probably next year we're going to be having a little bit more onto the stabilization fund. And this is basically to cover some shocks that we might face during the economic cycle. It could be next year, although there's no clear there's no clear to us that next year we're going to be needing to tap into the FAPE according to the economic conditions and the projection that we have estimated into the budget. As a reminder, we have estimate of tax revenues real growth rate of about 1.3%, which we think is still attainable, especially given our estimates for the growth of the economy. But that's basically the strategy. Thank you.